What's up, dude?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
Long time no speak. I'm good.
Very good. Very good. We're recording
Yeah.
this on the day of publishing the episode with Chad from Top Vegan TV, which is very
Legend.
exciting.
I'm actually quite looking forward to watching that. I'm not a fan of MasterChef. That's going to be quite good.
Yeah, no, me neither. I've never really got into it, but yeah, Top Vegan should be very interesting, so I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing that I get a lot in debates is all the animals that you kill with arable farming.
Ah, right, okay. Even though arable farming would be reduced on if everyone went vegan, because we'd require less arable farming because we don't wouldn't need to feed 100 billion animals a year.
Yeah, but
Yeah, okay.
they would still come back that even in one field of plants. But we could, if you had an allotment, you'd still end up killing animals through your allotment, blah 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 blah
But then
blah.
how far do you take it? You'd be like the, is it
Exactly,
the giants in India? Oh, come
which
on.
is why that statement is important in this argument.
Yeah.
You can only do as much as you possibly can, and to make it
Yes.
almost like a legal argument. It's as much as practicably possible. That's how it would stand up in court.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I have done everything I can possibly do within reason to reduce animal suffering. Well, I don't like
That's
it.
it.
Well, fuck off you.
You do what you can. That's
Yeah,
it.
yeah,
You do as much as you can.
yeah. But I've just been, while I was waiting for you to message, I was just looking through some social media, and I know we shouldn't do this, and we knew we should. I don't I definitely don't get bogged down in it. But a load of people arguing amongst themselves, vegans arguing amongst themselves about pointless
Oh.
vegan arguments, and you're like, come on, please. Why do it?
Oh, why do it exactly? Why
So
do it?
I realized what was happening. I quickly came off of the Book of Faces and left it. And then you messaged me. I was like, right, okay, let's go and do this. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a great laugh. So our guest today is someone who's asked to come on. It's a little edit point for me there.
Sorry, he's actually
He
requested to come on.
asked if he could come on. So obviously we bit his arm off. We've had to postpone it a couple of times because of factors, but here we are recording today. And coincidentally, our good friend Michelle from Veg Your Best has this week published her own episode where she interviews him as well.
Ah,
So
brilliant.
It's going to be interesting to see if we can ask him questions that Michelle hasn't already asked him.
Brilliant.
So yeah, and I've got to say, I might say this in the episode, I'm not sure. I did taunt you with the description of this person, this guest, because I said that he's an American black male stand-up comedian, and
Yeah.
I left it just long enough for you to think it might be Preacher Lawson.
Yeah, not to downplay our guest at all, obviously.
No, absolutely not. And but only because we've asked Preacher Lawson on more than one occasion, as has our super fan Martin, asked him to come on, and he's politely declined.
Yes, not only asked him, but asked him to sponsor us.
Yeah. You asked him for that as well, didn't you?
Will you come
Just
on?
can
Will you come on and be a guest on our
be a
podcast? If
guest.
you can't, could you just give us some money instead?
Ah, oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Oh,
We could get some proper kit.
can you imagine? I'd have a
Oh.
new headset after my child broke it. All right.
Anyway.
Can you imagine having good equipment? It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the content would still be shit, but at least it would sound good.
Yes. Yeah.
You can't polish a turd, Wes.
You can't polish a turd, no, but you can put some glitter on
Oh, Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. What else have we got?
Grand National.
Oh.
Yeah. It's all stuff and nonsense, isn't it?
It's just unnecessarily cruel. I don't understand how there's so much money in it. Do
No.
you know what I mean? There's millions and millions of pounds in it. It's just obscene.
Yeah. And
I
it's
think if the horse falls over and breaks its leg,
jockey.
they should shoot the jockey.
Well, there is that. Definitely, yeah. It's one of it's the same thing as me used to eat used to no. It's the same thing as the fact
Easy for you to
I
say.
used to be eat I used to eat meat a lot. I used to love the Grand National. There's a
Oh,
guy
really?
I used to watch it every year. I was like, oh, it's amazing. It does it this, it's that, blah, blah, blah. I remember seeing animal rights activists then, back in the 80s, kicking off about it. I was like, oh, they're mental. Yeah. And now I'm just like, one, I have no interest. Two, I think it's disgusting. And I just, I don't know, I just.
I never
You can't take this thing away, otherwise everybody kicks off about it.
I
Man.
never got in. I was never into horse racing or the Grand National or anything like that. I did go a couple of times with, I think with my brother-in-law, it must have been, to greyhound racing.
Yes.
And I didn't really get it at the time, but we stood outside for a bit and you could hear all the dogs barking and barking, but it wasn't a happy bark. It was a bark of, like, what I understand now is a bark of like terror and anguish.
Yeah.
And just to think, you know, that I've supported that is just horrible, horrible feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just so cruel having animals, exploiting animals for sport, isn't it?
Yeah. And then brings up the debate about horse riding.
Yes.
And I can only, again, as I have said, I like the quote, I can only speak for myself. I am not a horse owner. I have never ridden a horse.
I thought you were going to say I'm not a horse.
Not a horse either. But not only people that ride horses, in inverted commas, for pleasure, but vegans that ride horses for pleasure. Now, I know we do, like we've
Yes.
discussed, the reduction of animal suffering. But if you're a horse rider and you do look after it like a pet, but then you choose to sit on it and ride it, where does that line go? And it does confuse me because I'm not a horse rider.
No. And
I
isn't all
do
the
know
kit
the
leather?
vegan. Leather, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, what's the boundary between riding a horse and having a dog?
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody has a good answer for this, by all means, send the message. I am no expert on it,
No,
or you're, and we literally, it's not a rhetorical question. We are actually asking if somebody can give us a debate
yeah.
answer on it, then that's great.
Yeah, we've both got dogs. We
Yeah.
both had them before we went vegan.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have a dog again because is it the right thing to do?
That's why that's why you would only get rescue dogs, isn't it? You wouldn't buy a dog from a breeder, a dog from a rescue centre.
Okay. Yeah, maybe that's it then.
Because
So you just.
you're saving it from whatever fate it's
Yeah.
going to have, or whatever fate it had, and you're bringing it into a loving home where you do want, you do your best to love it and look after it. Unless you're an arsehole, you buy one to go. There are awful things for them. We don't do that. We look at dogs. Well, even though my dog is a complete bonker.
And even when our shit's on the carpet.
Yeah. But then you do that,
It's
so. She's only
There's
following
some
my
things
footsteps.
that don't need to go on the podcast, Will, and that is one of them.
We'll just have to see if it gets through editing, won't
Yeah, that's it. The hashtag shit on the carpet.
Oh, dear.
Where my fellow carpet shitters at?
Well, why is it we've said quite a lot that we waffle nonsense on here?
No, this is just all scripted.
Oh man. Well,
Oh, my love.
shall we get ready for our guest? I'm going to go and put a kettle on and then
Good
we.
idea. Yes, and before you do that, we'll just say, as we always say, give us a shout, get in touch, find us on social media, follow the link tree. You'll find us wherever you want to go.
Rate us, write a lovely review,
Yeah.
not scathing review, a nice lovely.
Yeah, don't give us a one-star review. Wes does enough of them.
Yeah. Write us a review. Click the bell so you can get updates on the new podcast episodes. That's my new one.
Yeah.
Click the bell. I might buy a bell and ring it.
Ring
Maybe
my bell. You can ring my bell. Is that what you're saying?
not. Going down a dirty route there. But if you do want to get in touch and you want to send us a message, or if you want to request to come on the podcast as today's guest has done, then you can send us an email at ourivegan podcast@gmail.com. Not the at the beginning, not that bit. That'd be weird. Or just send us a message on any of our social media channels.
Yes. Although I've got to confess, it's probably a month since I've looked at our TikTok. So I'll do that in between now and our guest joining us. Oh, God, what a
Cool.
laugh.
Brilliant. I shall speak to you in a bit.
Ciao. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
All right, thank you.
Not too bad at all. Weather's lovely here. What's it like there?
Say that again.
What's the weather like there? It's miserable and raining here because it's Britain.
Well, it's not at miserable level here. It's pretty cool. It's probably like 60 degrees, but the sun is barely coming out.
Right.
Okay, I'm just going to Google 60 degrees because, sorry, I was brought up on centigrade rather than Fahrenheit. That's something I've never ever got the hang of. So
Oh
stand
yeah,
by.
you know, so I don't, yeah, I wouldn't even know what to
16.
call it.
Yeah. Oh, 15. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's not bad. It's about 6 degrees here, which is considerably less than over there.
Looks
So
like
you're on the
there's,
west. Sorry, go on.
I was just gonna say, it looks, is it night, isn't it nighttime there? It looks like there's sun out.
We've got a few minutes, maybe. It's
Yeah.
just setting. Just
Okay.
setting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
So,
we've got about another hour and a half of light.
Okay,
yeah.
cool.
And you're on the west coast of the US,
Yes,
is that right?
sir.
Yeah.
I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in California.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Okay. I just picture Los Angeles, just like loads of massive palm tree lined streets, and then Compton. That's how I
Yeah,
that's
a
it.
lot of palm trees and then Compton out in the back. Yeah.
Yeah, keep that bit out the back.
Yeah, and you're right. A lot of the makeup out here, the architect looks the same. It doesn't matter if you're, in Los Angeles proper or if you're 20 miles out. A lot of the
Oh.
scenes, a lot of the streets do look like that.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. Okay. So I'm just going to do a little intro, if that's okay.
Yep.
But I wanted to check something. So your Instagram is Stephen Marcus Rilleford, but your name on
Yep.
the screen there is Marcus.
Yeah.
So which would you prefer?
Marcus is fine. I go by my middle name. A lot of family calls me Marcus, but
Okay.
on stage I go by my full name.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've watched some of your YouTubes and people introduce you as Stephen, don't they? Or Stephen Marcus. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I didn't know whether to go by Steven or whether to go by Marcus. There's enough Marcuses in the scene already.
Oh, okay.
I was like, you know what? Let me just go by my full name.
What is it about being called Marcus that draws people into stand-up comedy?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there is a difference in an approach, because I know when I put Steven on my job applications, I automatically get the interview.
Oh, what?
But for some reason, Marcus keeps showing up to work, so it's just a different response, you know? So I think, like, my family, initially, as I was growing up, I didn't know my first name was Steven. My dad's name is Steven, and I didn't know my first name was Steven until I was, like, in the third grade. I always thought my middle name was Steven because people called me Marcus so much, you know? Wow. So I transferred school 1 year, and in that transfer, the paperwork, you know, whatever it was, the reality came that my first name was Steven. So when the teacher went to go do the attendance, they're like, "Is Steven Relliford here?" And I was like, "Oh shit, I must have a brother in here or something." I'm like looking around the classroom to see who else has my last name. They're like, "Steven Marcus Relliford." I was like, Oh,
wait a minute.
Talking about me.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. Oh, that's funny. Okay. So, as you may have guessed, listener, our guest today is from the US, a stand-up comedian. You may have seen his, you may have listened to his podcast called, now I'm going to sound ever so British when I say this, because I cannot say it properly, but You All Had to Be There. That's not how it's supposed to sound, because y'all, we just can't say y'all, because it just sounds weird. So yeah, our guest is Steven Marcus Relliford. Welcome.
Thank you guys for having me, man. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Welcome to How I Vegan podcast. So I mentioned the stand up there. Let's start with that. What's the situation there? Because you've got quite a few YouTube videos of you doing some stand up, and I saw recently that you did comedy for the animals as well.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic. So talk to us about your stand-up. What's going on there?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I'll start from the beginning. I started in 2010, and my first show, actually, before even doing an open mic, was at the Comedy Store. I did the main room at the Comedy Store here in Hollywood. And it was amazing. I think I got bit by the bug, you know, that night. So ever since then, I've been doing stand-up in little pockets and areas and as much as I can, to the point where just running my own shows and doing my own thing and getting together with a group of guys and girls that, you know, we mold together pretty well, and we've been just rocking out. So, it's been 13 years now, which is kind of odd for me, because it feels like my stand-up, if it was a person, it would be like a teenager or like a preteen with an attitude, you know. It's like, what did you say? Go upstairs to your room, you know, like, you better finish your homework type of thing. I'm like, I feel like a parent or something. And then, you know, I don't have a Netflix special yet. So it's also, if I tell people I've been doing it for 13 years, for some reason, they kind of compare the years of me doing stand-up to like marriage. They always look at my wedding ring. They're like, "Oh, for 13 years, you should be married. You should be married by now. Oh, you ain't got a Netflix special yet? Oh man." And I'm like, well, we got in a fight in 2010, you remember? And I was sleeping on the couch in 2014. And then from sleeping on the couch, I'm back in the game now. So yeah, it's been a little journey. So I've been able to do stand-up a little bit of everywhere. I was in New York last year up until the end of January of this year. And then I've got to do stand-up probably a good portion of myself, like learning and getting my voice together. I was out in South Carolina, which is, I was in the boonies, essentially. I don't know if you how familiar you guys are with the U.S., but I was in South Carolina, which is one of the original states to sell Black people, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like they still have the slave quarters up, and they still have, like, the auction areas up where they auction people off. So I got to hone my skills in that type of environment, which was interesting, very cool, very dope to learn, you know, how to navigate my artistry. 'Cause I like to talk about things that are like that, you know, things that we feel kind of like there's some problems to still be solved around like people relationships and stuff like that. So it was very dope learning, you know, how to do comedy there. So I've been in LA pretty much all my life. I'm born and raised here in California. And yeah, I've always just had an inclination. I think just kind of the similar thing that gets most people into stand up. You kind of hear it your whole life, and it's kind of like a calling. It was one of those things that I was like, man, I would hate to be on my deathbed and not have attempted to do this.
Yes.
You know, I felt like this was in my spirit and I had to attempt it at least because it was such a thing that was on the forefront of my mind as something that I would like to try out. So I did it and I haven't turned back since. And this probably been the worst curse. I wouldn't wish this life on anyone. I would not wish this life on my worst enemy. I would not. It
Why?
was
I was gonna say, so you enjoy it then, and then you.
I think I love pain for some reason. I don't know. What is that? A masochist or some shit? Yeah, I just
Yeah.
love for some reason. It has to be one of the most painful outside of physical, like gut-wrenching. It has to be one of the painfulest emotional and mental art forms to participate in. But it's also so rewarding. It's so fun as well. So yeah, I've been doing comedy for 13 years, and every day I'm just looking to get better, looking to learn more, looking to build relationships, and you know, looking to make something shake, you know.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So what's the vegan comedian scene like over there? Because like here we've got quite a few fairly prominent vegan comedians. We've got Ramesh Ranganathan, we've got Simon Amstel, we've got Sarah Pascoe, Lou Sanders, even people like John Robbins, who says he's broadly vegan. What's the situation over there?
You know, I hate to say it, but I don't think it's as popping or prominent here as it is there. Now, there are a couple of vegan comedians, though I haven't seen too many vegan comedians either have more than like one or two jokes about it, meaning they don't spend enough time, like even myself, up until the Comedy for Animals show. Now, I've been writing vegan jokes ever since I've been vegan, but there's only been maybe six or seven shows that I've been able to do that were vegan, kind of like friendly, or the actual theme of the show was vegan. It was a vegan show or a vegan event, to where I've been able to do, you know, a good 10 to 15 minutes at least of material on vegan stuff, as opposed to 99% of the shows that I do or mics that I encounter. I don't do my vegan material and I don't get to practice it. And I may just do, if I do, one joke. You know, I don't
It's,
spend,
yeah.
so they're like Preacher Lawson's vegan
Yes.
and Tony Baker, he's vegan. And Tig Notaro, who I actually did the show with, she's vegan. And I'm sure there's even more, but none of them spend more than two to three jokes on veganism. So it's kind of hard to peg them. They're not like
Yes.
leading, the vegan wave on
No.
comedy, because here it's kind of, I don't know, I guess like you fall into a niche and in a type of demographic. So here people rather lead with comedy than veganism. They rather lead with, oh, I'm just a funny person, as opposed to I'm a vegan and I'm funny, you know?
Yes.
And I'm starting to lean towards the other side now. I'm like, I'm vegan, I'm
Yeah.
plant-based, and then I'm, you know, because I mean, it's a lifestyle choice that's something very dear to me, and it influences every area of activity, you know, as everything overlaps with each other. So yeah, I've been vegan for 9 years, and I've been able to probably write well over 30 minutes on veganism, but I haven't been able to exercise that and practice that a lot, just in the shows that I've encountered and things that, and really, after I did the Comedy for Animals show, it gave me a kind of a more, I guess, like it put a fire under me to just do more jokes like that in any space that I'm in, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So Comedy for Animals, then, that was specifically vegan comedians in a vegan audience or a charity for animal welfare?
So most of the times, if when you do stand up, you know, unless everyone knows you, and depending on what your style is, like, I think for me personally, good comedy is comedy that is going to be challenging to some, and then some are going to get it right away. It's going to be polarizing in some ways. It's going to split up the crowd. Maybe you got 10% of people rocking with you, but if you do it in a skillful way, at the end of the joke, everybody's on board, you know? So I appreciate that element of comedy, but I think most times you go into the space with your audience is, in the beginning, is more adversarial. You know, it's kind of like a fight, you know?
Yeah. And it they takes... sit back and go, come on then, make me laugh.
Yeah. And maybe that's kind of a mental thing too, as an artist, because I mean, there's an element of people, I think everyone has a little heckler spirit in them, a little judgment spirit in them a little bit, you know? But most of the time, people want to see other people do well. You don't want to have a bad time. You know, Wes, you don't want to just intentionally sit through something that's bad. You want people to enjoy themselves. You want to enjoy yourself as well. So it's kind of a mental flip. But most of the time, it feels like if you, especially veganism, if you bring up how people eat, which is more dear than most people's religion, you know, you're definitely going to split up the crowd.
Yeah,
that's true. Yes, absolutely. Because people will often laugh at jokes about Christianity, some of the others less so, but if you start poking fun at them eating pigs and cows, then that you're going to lose most of the audience pretty quick, aren't you?
And you probably, now you even got the waiter staff after you, you know, now you got the employees hating you now, and it's like you can't even enjoy the show. But that's the fun part about, you know, being skillful and being constructive and just, you know, trying to make something work, because you have to take those jumps and that risk to find the other side, which is what we're just talking about, the hilarity and people wanting you to do well.
So which is your favorite sort of gig then? Is it one where you can just sort of riff, or one where you've got a finely honed sort of act? What's the vibe?
Well, this is, I would say it's a marriage of both. Like, if you give me the time, if you give me the time, I'm going to do it all. You give me 30 minutes at minimum, you give me 30 minutes, I'm going to do a little bit of everything. Because I think, okay, the difference between riffing and like structured, you know, worked out material is like, it's like food. Right. It's like the difference between a home cooked meal and like a group meal that you make, like when everybody's involved. So a home cooked meal, you have your own, like you have your recipe, you're at the house, you're preparing it yourself, you know, and then you show up to the show with it already made. You're like, this is the pie that, you know, my family's passed down for generations, and everybody enjoys it and they love it. Right. But when you make a riff, it's kind of like you're in a stranger's kitchen and you have help. The audience is also throwing in ingredients, and the audience is saying, oh, throw in this and throw in this. So when you riff, it's kind of the difference between like a home cooked meal and like a potluck that everybody, you know, participated in, and they brought things to it to enjoy. So
it could be great and it might not be.
Yeah.
There's that risk. There's that risk, isn't there, though, that it might depends who's in your audience.
Well, the thing about riffing is that when you do a joke at home from a home crafted joke, I've never even said this language. You do a homemade joke, right? Versus like a group joke or a riff joke, everybody's in on the riff. It's kind of like the secret between us. Yes. It's kind of like an inside joke. Like, if I do a homemade joke, you know it's funny and you enjoyed it, but you also know I made it at home. And you don't know fully how I make it. You don't know what's the ingredients, but you enjoyed it and it was good. But riffing is like, you know the ingredients because we're all a part of the riff. Now, no one outside of this, because riffing is also unique to that show. It's
only ever going to happen to once.
That audience. So it's kind of like an inside joke between me and the 30 people who are there, or me and the crowd. And they get to hold that special, like, oh, he's funny, but he also did this one thing where he talked to this one girl, and him and that one girl was talking about this, and then it went there, and then the audience laughed, and you know, and that's also special. That's also a special thing. And I enjoy both. If you give me enough time, I would do a little bit of everything. But this is what I tell comics, who, you know, I don't like to give advice, but this is the only advice that I do give, is that your space is A, meaning your environment, your crowd, everything from the makeup to the stage to the staff, your space is A. So that's primary. But your material is B. And not to say that it's not as important, though you always want to have in the forefront of being flexible and being authentically you. And you can only do that if you're in the moment. You're not going to be able to do that if you're really stoic and really in this rigid form. So even though your material is B, your material must be in your DNA. You must remain flexible, and it must be so seamless that, because when you do riffing will eventually take you down a road and a train of thought that you've already kind of thought about as far as comedy a lot of the time. So a riff can connect to a joke if you're willing
to
remain flexible, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. So are you, do you do like a organized tour, or are you more like perform at different comedy clubs in the local area? What's the situation with you now?
I'm just now getting off tour with the Y'all Have to Be Here crew. And now I'm just looking to do shows within the city and possibly just run my own show. Me and a friend, Jason, we've been doing monthly shows for the past maybe 3 or 4 months now. And we're looking to, you know, continue to do those and shoot short films and do some animation stuff as well. But I'm kind of just bouncing around the city. There's 3 main clubs here. Now, I told you that my first time performing was at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, that sounds like a big gig for a first time.
Well, this is just the notion and the undertone of the scene. And a lot of it's my doing, because a lot of the comedy is like shaking hands, kissing ass, and just meeting people. And I'm kind of over that, Matt. Like, I don't want to do all that. Like, and I don't know. Maybe because I'm, like I said, my comedy is like a preteen. So she got an attitude, you know? So she don't want to just, she got an attitude. She giving me back talk and shit. So it's just like, I don't have the energy to do that. Maybe that's something that I gotta focus on. You know, that's something I gotta meditate on and work through. But my second time performing at the Comedy Store was last October.
Oh wow, that's a gap.
That's a huge gap.
Wow.
That's a huge gap. And the first time I got to perform, I got to do 5 minutes. The second time I performed, I got to do 3.
No. 3 minutes. What's that? One joke and a laugh. 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Could I make a not joke last 3 minutes?
So get this. So there's the Laugh Factory, that's another popular club, and then the Improv, right? And I've signed up for this Laugh Factory show like back in 2013, and I just got my audition during the pandemic over Zoom. And then they gave me my first actual real live show at the Laugh Factory is going to be on the 24th of this month. So it took all the way from like 2013 till the pandemic
Why did it
to
take them 7 years to give you an audition?
that's how quote unquote pop like packed and like world renowned this club is to where
Wow.
people and I was standing in line around there. They have a mic that happens like every Monday and it's set at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, so you show up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the line is already wrapped around the building. And it's just nearly like, unless you've shaken enough hands and kissed enough ass. And then all the time, there's people who don't have to sign up. They're able to go through and just because they know people and stuff like that. But I haven't done that. I haven't, you know, been that type of guy. So like, and I don't have the internet, you know, clout. Which happens at all three of these clubs. If you have the internet presence or if you've shaken enough hands, you can bypass people who've been standing in line for years, you know. And that's kind of the notion of it. So even now that I have this show at the Laugh Factory on the 24th, I'm thinking, should I just do all the jokes that I did back in 2013 that got me the audition, you know?
Never forgotten them. It's fun.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
God, that must be in. I mean, that's a fantastic achievement to get a spot there, but that must be really quite frustrating that it has to take so long. And like you say, you've got to shake so many hands and all that sort of thing. That's, I think I
I mean,
would,
it really
that would put me
does.
off.
It really has. And I'm processing it live with you guys. Like, I really have enjoyed, and now I'm coming to terms with it's shaped and molded my comedy. And I think for better, I think on paper, maybe for worse, because I've probably been blackballed more than I would like to be. But artistically, it allows me this to like speak on an element of truth that I've always wanting to been, you know, reaching towards and being about, you know. So this is an element of a reality that a lot of people experience. I feel like the funniest people and the most talented people in whatever space, a lot of times we may not even know them on a famous level, because some of these people might be in our family or some of these people might be our friends who haven't taken that step to make it be known on a wide public scale. So I realize there's people who are probably better than Michael Jordan or better than LeBron James, and they'll never be in the NBA. You know,
They
they
just don't
won't
get the
make.
break. They don't get the chance to take, do they? That's it.
Yeah, there's only so many spots, it's only so much access. And definitely with being consistent, definitely helps. But there's people now, like I say, you know, jokingly, I say my comedy is like a preteen. But there's people now whose comedy can rent a car, which is here in the States, you got to be 25. You know, you got to be 25 to rent a car. So it's like there's people with comedy who can rent a car, but they don't have a Netflix special. You know, they're not world renowned, like known and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just, I think what I've done is fell in love with the art so much that I'm going to continue to pursue it in a way that I'm hoping that the people who resonate with me will eventually find me and I will find them. And then we can continue to move on happily like that. But I'm not looking to be quote unquote famous or quote unquote get a big break in that regard, you know?
That's cool. So you mentioned that you've been vegan for 9 years. What's the story behind that then? How did that all come about?
Yeah. So, it's a couple of different ways that I like to approach it, but physically, I got really sick after eating some eggs. I was already like 2 years vegetarian, but I got really sick after eating some eggs, and it could have been how I prepared them, or they just could have been bad eggs. I'm not sure, but I couldn't hold even water down for like 7 days. So I kind of went on
Oh.
like an impromptu fast and detox, and yeah, it was
Wow.
one of those coming to Jesus moments. Like you're on your hands and knees, and you're like, oh, you're just praying to somebody, whoever out there. You're just like, yo, please get me back to some type of balance because I am feeling like shit. So,
Yeah. What do they call it on the porcelain telephone?
You're on the porcelain phone. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
that's it.
was throwing up. I was shaky. I was nauseated. Like I barely had any energy to walk. I was lightheaded. And this lasted for about 7 days. And during that time, I was like, you know what? I'm going vegan. Like I'm going plant-based. I just don't see the point of why I even ate those eggs. Those eggs were horrible. I didn't need that shit. And I'm just upset with myself. Like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm not, you know, Jesus, take the wheel, as they say. I was like, take the wheel, you in the driver's seat. Let me just, I'll be in the passenger seat. You go ahead and go. So that's kind of what prompted it. And then I had a friend too, Millie, who was vegan. And I just kind of seen the way that she navigated it. And she was never pressuring me or pushing me to be vegan. I just got to witness up close like how she was living in her lifestyle and stuff like that. So that was really cool. And then, you know, I want to say like, I guess, you know, spiritually or whatever, however that, you know, whatever that means to each person. But I always kind of felt like this calling of, you know, just looking at it like logically, I whatever, like, I don't know. Did you guys invent people? Like, do you remember creating people?
No. In what
No.
way?
That's what I say to myself. Like, I didn't make people, and I don't remember, like, whoever made people, if there's a creator or a God out there,
Oh, okay.
whatever it happens, like, I just don't feel like whatever made people also said, okay, in order for you to live, you got to chase down these other things that I made, you know, or you got to capture these other animals that I've made. And it just didn't seem logical to me. And then, you know, I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, it takes a village or it takes teamwork to capture meat, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm too lazy to be convinced. I'm too lazy to be convinced to go chase down some, like, there's people who break their ankles chasing a chicken because they're trying to capture the chicken. And it's not even that much food on the chicken, quote unquote, food. So it's like, I just don't see the point. And I couldn't be convinced to chase down animals or meat in this prehistoric, you know, man time when there's plenty of food that sits still. There's plenty of food that lets you know when it's ready. It has a particular smell or color to it. It lets you know that it's ripe and it doesn't run. So I was just like, I'd rather just eat food that don't run or is not trying to get away. And it just made more logical sense to me, you know. And those are the ways that I kind of look at it and think about it as far as, you know, health and spirituality and for the animals and all that. I was just trying to cut as much, you know, pain from my environment and plate as I could, you know, metaphysically and literally.
That's amazing.
Love
Apart from having the shits,
that.
did you find any part of that transition difficult? Have you had any difficulties ever since?
I would say I think it in some ways it was challenging. And this is an it's okay, I feel like it's two-parted because the difficult thing was dealing with family and then and friend family and friends. Like that first 2 years of veganism was probably one of the hardest because you know you're pretty much waving a flag in any room that you go in, and it can be even silent because eventually I was never the type to be like, oh, I'm vegan, even though that's a running joke about how vegans are always letting you know. I've never been that type. But eventually, if you spend more than an hour with anybody, the concept of food is going to come up some form or fashion. People are going to ask you if you're hungry. People are going to ask you if you've eaten lately. People are going to ask you if you want to go get food and what do you like to eat. And even when people meet here, I know. I don't know if it's the same there, but even here, even when you meet someone for the first time, just out and about, a lot of the early conversation or small talk is around what people like to eat. You know, what are the local restaurants that you go to? What's the local stuff that you like to enjoy and food, and what's the good food around here? And, you know, what fast food areas do you like to get, and what numbers do you get? So food is just such a big running factor in our livelihood, to where, yeah, even though I was never that type of vegan, food comes up to where your flag is eventually raised and people know what side you're on, and you just have to be like, oh, I'm plant-based, and they take it as they, you know, they take it, you know. But
And the worst part of it is that
I think friends and family is one of the other challenging things.
Yes. And the worst part of it is that I found, and I thought of this when I was listening to your chat with Michelle from Veg Your Best earlier today. The time that your family and friends find out that you're vegan is when you're just newly vegan, generally.
Yeah.
When you don't know fuck all about being vegan. So when they're asking you questions, you can't answer it as well as you could. And yet, you know, after like 6 months, a year, 18 months, when you know all the facts and you've watched all the videos and you've learned all about it, they don't want to know because you've been vegan already for a year or so. And so you can't go back to them and go, oh, you know, when you asked me about being vegan before and I got it all wrong, can we just have that conversation again?
Right.
You can't do that, can you? It's so frustrating.
It is. I mean, and even now, I still go back and forth with my sister about specific, like about protein. We constantly have to go back and forth about protein, you know, and I'm just like, protein is a myth, okay? Protein ain't even, what makes you think God made protein, okay? Where the protein at, okay? You think I just get, there's a man who survived on locusts, you know, I'm just making up stuff at this point because I'm just tired of it. But and the thing too about that is like your choices that you make as far as like where you work, what type of work you do, your relationships, your love life, your a lot of the things that you do that you carry on daily, even as I was comparing like doing comedy, it becomes like you're giving birth to an idea and a practice that is kind of like could take on a life like a child, you know? So those first 2 years and that first couple of months that you're vegan, it's like having a newborn, you know, like you don't fully know. It's turning you into a parent as the baby's there, you now became a parent to something else that you're still learning how to nurture, learning how to take care of. And if you guys have ever grown a plant, it's the same thing with the plant. If you have a sprout, and let's say this is a mango tree or like a banana tree, but in the form of a sprout, it's like this. And you have to put barriers around it to protect it. Because you fully don't know the ins and outs of what the growth of this tree is going to be, but you do know you have to protect it and nurture it. So I feel like, man, a lot of the times when people are making changes like that, they're probably better off keeping it to themselves for the first, you know, 3 months to 6 months, just as you get more familiar with it and nurture it and get stronger in your practice. You want to get stronger in your practice because you don't want to teeter off. Because I know that first year, I went back to Texas, which is like in the South here. They got really good barbecue. And a friend of mine was like, eat this, man, I made barbecue. Eat this barbecue. Eat, come on, man. And I had a piece just because he guilted me into eating some food that he made, you know? And that was just like, I regretted it. My stomach was hurting. I was feeling like shit. And it was just no reason for me to have that or to feel that peer pressure like that, when I should have been more, solidified in my own self-esteem as far as where I was in veganism and being plant-based, because I let that teeter me, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh. And, you know, those are some of the things where I feel like you do have to kind of protect the plant. You have to put something around it. So an elephant doesn't just come into your garden and step on your new sprout. This is a new sprout. Yes. You're giving a new life to something. So you have to protect the sprouts, your ideas, like they're in the garden and they could be trampled any minute.
There's nothing better than a hunk of prime Labrador steak, wonderfully marbled. And that is almost entirely dependent on how it's produced. Elwood's Organic Dog Meat has complete control of this entire journey. So I'm here at Elwood's Farm to find out a little more about it.
Welcome to Elwood Farms.
Thank you very much, Elwood.
I hear you do a bit of barbecuing.
I do a little bit of barbecuing every now and then, yes.
From a chef's point of view, consistency is key for everything.
It doesn't matter if it's a Rottweiler ribeye, a Pyrenees mince, or a lab sirloin.
You can always tell when the dog comes from a place where it was well reared. And every step has to be right, doesn't it? Oh, you should see these guys. So, from an Elwood's point of view, there's complete traceability.
Absolutely. Unrivaled traceability, so it's fine.
Every single piece of dog meat?
Yeah, from pub to farmer's market.
Everything the dog's been fed?
Everything about it.
For each dog?
Yeah. Only Marks and Spencer's and Whole Foods do this.
Where else can people order from?
From elwooddogmeat.com. That's ELWOOD. Dogmeat.com.
For top quality meat from dogs for people. Meat that's local, sustainable, and humanely harvested. There's only Elwood's Organic Dog Meat.
They seem pretty friendly, don't they? They're more responsive to me than my kids, to be honest.
Now, before we carry on properly, I need to pick you up on something that you said in your chat with Michelle. You said that you love celery. That was my face, Wes, when I heard it.
I mean,
I can't eat it. I cannot eat it.
Okay, hold on. How long have you guys been vegan?
Oh, only five years next month, actually. Yeah, you're just five now, aren't you, Wes? Yeah. So we're only toddler vegans.
So both 5 years?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. That's really cool. So I feel like between 5 and 7, you become really simple in your approach to eating. I'm sure you guys have already had moments of this, but there comes a point where, so I feel like also going back to that conversation about like, is it tough? I feel like, yeah, it's kind of two-parted. You have your friends and family in that environment and you just learning how to, you know, strengthen your practice. And in that, you also are learning what you actually enjoy and like to eat. Yes. And a lot of it is a lot of trial and error. You know, and it's you being willing to be uncomfortable and being willing to tinker in the kitchen. You have to be willing to play with things. So I always try to tell people, like, when you're first starting out, just purchase a lot of the things that you already enjoy as far as fruits and vegetables. Like, get all the fruits that you love, get all the vegetables that you already enjoy, and then figure out different recipes with the things that you already enjoy, because a lot of people don't know their way around a potato. A lot of people don't know the way around, you know, lettuce and salads and arugula and like how to make their own dressings. Man, a lot of it was just, how do you make sauces? I've made so many sauces over the years to where I got a sauce that's made with avocado and cashews that will make any meal delicious. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. So I think in those first few years, it's tough because you don't know how to cook. You don't know what to cook. You don't know how to work around, you know, specifically like vegetables and fruit and what to get and what other additives and ingredients that are good for making food. So once you get over that hump of like purchasing everything and getting everything, and then there's a point to where you're like, man, I can just eat a bag of spinach. You know? I can eat a bag of spinach and I'll be satiated.
I have to agree with you that it was literally the last couple of days. I've said it regularly for a while, but particularly recently, I was like, all I really want is just a plate of vegetables fried up in some spice. I'd be quite happy with that because I know that's like the healthiest option. So tonight we did. I went to the shop and I just got a load of vegetables, bought them home, fried them, put some spices in, on some rice, and I was stuffed.
He was done. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I'm quite happy with that. I don't need to overcomplicate it. And that sometimes, or we'd be quite processed shit, and that's no better.
And that's one of the things people beat us over the head with, isn't it? Oh, vegan food is so expensive. But actually, just a bunch of vegetables and some rice is pennies, literally pennies, isn't it? And yet it's a brilliant meal.
Yeah.
Right. So I felt the same way. That's where the celery comment comes from, because there's been plenty of days where I've just had celery and avocado. And I've just eaten those two things together like chips, what? And it's, make some guacamole or something, and it's perfect. So, even the other day, I'll tell you this, since you guys are my boys now, don't tell other people this. I don't want too many people to hear this, but
it's okay. No one's listening.
This is a vegan, this is a plant-based vegan top secret right here. And this is actually an old recipe. So, you get to the point in your kitchen where you're running out of items and you're like, oh shit, I'm just making whatever the fuck I got in the kitchen. I'm gonna put it together. I had nothing but an onion.
Right.
Have you guys ever eaten? I'm sure you guys never have, but because maybe your parents have. This used to be an old like food item. This is like an old like 15th century food, but people used to eat roasted onions, just
roasted. I thought you were gonna say raw.
Roasted onions,
yeah. So I just had a roasted onion, and I've probably ate the whole bag of onions roasted.
Wow!
All you need is a little oil, a little salt and pepper, and 350, and you bake it for an hour, and it's moist, it's juicy, it's soft. It's like, oh my gosh, it's the most delicious thing. And it was like, talk about pennies. That's nothing. Yeah. That's nothing.
Wes has just gone to check if he's got any onions.
I just thought, if I've got an onion, I'm going to chuck it in the oven.
Man. Yo, Wes, try it out. Let me know, man. I want to see a message. Try it out and be like, you know what? That was actually pretty good. If you got any vegan butter or any oil or anything, salt and pepper, a little paprika or whatever, man, it is delicious. And that's it.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
And this is another reason why I think people are addicted to like meat and eating, because even like we just said, it takes a moment to where you're like, oh, I can really be satiated with something simple, and it takes a while to get there. But I think a lot of people are addicted to meat because deep down inside, they know that there's no food in heaven. So they're trying to eat as much meat down here as they can. They're trying to eat as much food as they, like it's going out of style, because it literally is if you're going to die anytime. So it's like, you're just trying to eat as much meat as you can because enjoy it, because you're addicted to it.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's really good.
So you said earlier about your family sort of not being on board as such. What was their reaction to change?
I mean, a lot of the families here in the States, especially Black families, they pride themselves on cooking and what their cooking repertoire looks like. So I come from a family that a lot of people cook different types of seafood and barbecue and a lot of meat heavy food. So when you go vegan in a family like that, or any family, I feel like they feel like you're turning on your traditions. You're turning on the ways, you're turning on our ways, like it's like you just joined a new religion in the household or something, so a lot of people were giving me you know, jokes and kind of talking down and not really fully even believing it. And they would just say things like, come on, man, you can eat a rib. You know, I won't tell your white friends that you ate a rib, you know, because here, eating healthy and eating plant-based is associated with whiteness. So it's like it's associated with yoga, you know, and like
all the hippie stuff.
Yeah, all the hippie stuff. Yeah. Right. So it was already one of those things where people would just be like, come on, man. Like, I don't care if you eat a rib. Like, I know you know, a lot of people still have like, I know you really want a burger type of energy. Like, a lot of people still have like, I know you want a steak type of energy, you know?
Wow. But you've got Lizzo. She's one of the biggest stars. Lizzo's one of the biggest stars in the world at the minute. And she's proudly vegan, isn't she?
Who?
Lizzo.
Oh, Lizzo's vegan? I didn't know Lizzo was vegan.
Oh, right. Okay. No? Was that just me who knew that?
I didn't know.
Get me down with the kids.
Take you out.
Get me with a pop culture reference.
who's Lizzo?
Who's Lizzo? I couldn't name any of her songs, but I'm sure she's vegan.
That's cool.
I'm going to have to be corrected then. But yeah, you can refer to her if you get any other questions from your family.
So how long have you guys been doing the podcast?
Just over 12 months.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
We're not even toddlers in that realm.
We're still in nappies.
Nah, he's starting to walk now. You got to watch him now. He's starting to walk.
Yeah. We're getting there. We kind of feel like we know what we're doing now. Cool. But even if it doesn't always sound like it.
And what brought on the podcast? What made you guys say, hey, you know what? We should start this.
Well, so I've been... I have a fairly lengthy commute to work, and I've been doing that nearly 16 years, and I always listen to podcasts the whole time. And so when I went vegan, or when we went vegan at the same time, this was just before me, I thought, I'm going to find a vegan podcast. And I just couldn't find one that I liked. And then I thought, well, how hard can it be to make a podcast? So here we are. I said to Wes, will you do a podcast with me? And he said, no. And then a year later, I said, will you do a podcast with me? And he went, yeah, all right.
And here cool.
I think it was like we were talking about earlier on, that I don't think either of us had enough knowledge.
No. It would have been a disaster if we'd have done it then.
This is obviously a massive learning curve anyway. But now we've got a bit more knowledge behind us that we can... We can have a not a debate, but we can, in our intros and outros, we can have a little bit of a chat about stuff and have a valid opinion on stuff. But also have slightly more meaningful conversations with you guys.
Yeah, and the whole point of the show is that our guest tells us how they live their life as a vegan. You know, it's not us telling people this is what you should do. We just get people on from all different walks of life and say, how do you live? How do you get by? You know, we ask similar questions every episode, but the answers are nearly always different.
Yeah.
Because people have got their own different ways. And, you know, some of the feedback that we've had from people is that, you know, they find it useful and they've picked something up and, you know, you never know. And we always tag different. Roasted onions. What? That has definitely not come up before. This is episode 33. That has never come up before. if somebody listens to it and they think, oh yeah, that's useful, you know, we tag all the products that people mention, different companies and stuff like that, just to help spread the love, really. You know, there's so much in this area that people just don't know about. I've learned loads from doing this. It's been great.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. Congrats. I love to hear it. Do you guys, there's a football team out there, right? Because you guys are in the UK. That's all like fully vegan.
Forest Green Rovers. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Yes.
did you know that there is a podcast out of New York that was essentially covering them when they first
Oh,
started out
really?
and they're vegan, and then
Wow.
the team picked them up as their official podcast sponsors. So it was
Fantastic.
so cool because it's like a vegan team and it's a vegan podcast, and they're kind
Brilliant.
of doing it as a gag. They're just like, we're going to follow around this vegan club because it's pretty cool what they're doing. And they just talked about football and talked about this vegan club to where the following year they got brought in as their official podcast, sponsors or whatever.
Brilliant. Fantastic. There's the current like team head coach of Forest Green Rovers is one of my childhood, yeah, just about childhood idols. Footballer called Duncan Ferguson, who played for my favourite team, Everton. And he's an absolute club legend. And he's just started out into club management. And when they did the big announcement, the chairman Dale Vince, and he sort of announced him, and one of the questions he got asked was, "Oh, how do you feel about being the manager for a vegan team?" And the way that he stumbled over talking about veganism, it was obvious he had no idea at all. And he was like, "Oh, well, yeah, I'm looking forward to what I get for lunch, and this is really important." It was so awkward. It made me laugh.
That's funny.
But God love him. God love him. I think they're about to get relegated this season, but never mind. They'll come back bigger and stronger. Anyway, so when you went vegan, then how did things change for you then, physically or mentally?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of similarities to what people talk about as far as clarity, mental fog. And I think I just felt a little bit more spiritually, like, I guess, inclined or like in tune. I think there's always, I mean, it's probably varies for each individual. And I'm looking to get stronger in that practice. But I think whatever, is roaming around the mind, and however you get messages and however you get inclinations and callings to do things, I think that's a clear, connection between like whatever brought us here or the energy that we use. And it definitely got me a little closer to that. And I just felt happier. I felt happier. I got to know where my food was coming from to an extent. I got to know how my food was processed. I actually got really heavily into gardening and planting around that same time. So I was growing food and learning the different, just the growing process and the ways of procuring and food out of the ground, and even practicing aquaponics, and to the point where I was building aquaponic systems for people, which is a way to grow food using fish or using a pond. So
What?
you can have a pond or a pool or a fish tank, and you have your fish tank here and you have your plant source above the fish tank. And with a pump, you can just rotate the water from the fish tank up into the plants, and it will just be a cycle throughout the day to where now you're using the nutrients from the fish waste, and it's growing the plants just that much faster and that much,
What?
vibrant. So getting into stuff like that definitely like just made my understanding of food and plants and just a little bit stronger and deeper. So yeah, I feel all those things, physically better, mentally better. I've gotten to like going into plant-based and like veganism allowed me to explore fasting and like just other ways of eating, like mono meals, to where I'm looking not to eat as complicated on some days. So I'm like, okay, I can just have melons and grapes today, as a meal, and just keep it, on a more hydrating level. So I feel like a lot of what I've come across and learned is due to, going into a more plant-based lifestyle and exploring that. And yeah, I feel tremendously better about that because yeah, that's everything, really. It's just like
where you are, you know, where you are in your heart and stuff like that. So yeah, I feel, even thinking about it now, I'm like, yeah, I'm so happy that I've made that decision. And it's only been nothing but cool.
What's the best thing about it? What's the best thing about being vegan?
I think problem solving around mistreatment. Like I'm doing my best that I can to an extent to problem solve the concept of mistreatment. Like I want to combat and counter mistreatment as much as I can. And going vegan and being plant-based is an actionary and a visible way that I'm looking to counter mistreatment in my environment. And I think that's one of the best things, if not the best thing, because yeah, I think as a collective, we will fully never get to enjoy the concepts of peace and happiness unless that's, you know, permeated through all of our activities, unless that's like part of, until that becomes part of our practice in every area of activity, I don't think we'll know the fullness of joy that we could experience. Like even now, I think that's why now across the board, life feels like a parody of what it could be. We all know deep down inside that things are not the way that they ought to be. And if they were, they would just be that much better. And I think with that feeling and that inclination that we all have deep down inside, going plant-based allows me to challenge that notion in just a degree. You know, there's obviously other elements because the problem is yet to be solved, and we're still living in the parody. So until the veil in the parody drops, we still know that we have more work to do. But I think it's just an element of work around food and harm that I'm able to look at visibly and just be like, yeah, I'm not participating in this type of, you know, practice that where I feel like would just bring me more harm. And it's just participating in harm across this, across the board.
Awesome.
Profound.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, man. That's
Yeah,
why I do comedy. That's why
I
you know, I was trying to run for office, but nobody was paying attention to me. So now I tell jokes.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, so apart from roasted onions, what's your favorite vegan product at the moment?
Oh man, I would have to say, well, I really fell in love. There's a place out here, if you guys ever get a chance to come out here and fuck around and get some food, there's a spot in Hollywood called Crossroads Kitchen, and they have a pizza there, a pepperoni pizza there that, man, I just love this pizza. Now, the pizza is like $25. I don't know. It's like damn near 30 pounds for the pizza itself, but it's good. It's so
It's worth it.
good. Yeah. So that's the first thing that came to mind is that damn pizza from Crossroads Kitchen. But I'm also thinking about there's a spot in downtown LA called Wild Living Food. And everything is raw or like partially cooked. It's one of these fancy, dandy, like raw food vegan spots. But they
Wow.
have a pasta, they have a warm pasta, like a Alfredo, and it is so good. They use kelp noodles, and it's just an amazing cashew type of pasta that they have. And man, I love it all. If I looked at my food app, my ordering, like Postmates or my Uber Eats or whatever, I got all different. I order from vegan sushi spots that I enjoy. There's a spot that makes a good portobello mushroom burger not too far from here. Man, fried portobello mushroom. It tastes kind of like a chicken breast or something, but it's a mushroom and it's amazing. So, man, I have a lot of favorites that I enjoy. Cauliflower wings, of course, still munching on those heavy. Yeah, when I'm not eating celery or onions.
Brilliant.
You
Celery dipped
know,
in guacamole.
it's so funny too, because it's like I'm sure this has probably happened to you guys, or probably will probably still continue to happen, but every now and then, either someone in my friend group or someone that I just meet, or maybe a family member, they always try to make this joke about eating grass. They always want to, like they always want to make this so you can actually just eat the grass, right? So is the grass vegan? Can you just eat? And they just, I hate this goddamn joke. I hate people bringing this thing up, and they're just like, yeah, you actually got food all around you. You got, there's grass, there's leaves outside. You can eat the leaves. You ain't never hungry, huh?
When you go camping, what do you eat? Well, there's plenty of grass in fields.
Just the floor, yeah. Wow.
You have any like inspirations like in the celebrity world, or just in your own like in your own friend, anyone that
Yeah,
inspires you?
there's definitely people who I enjoy and I idolize, as far as I like what they're doing, and I think they're going about it in a cool way. As far as like comedy, I like Dick Gregory and Paul Mooney. They've both already passed away, but they were really funny. And Dick Gregory was actually vegan, and he did a lot of cool things as far as like even running for office and just speaking very, powerfully about, injustices and being vegan and like, working on the body and trying to reduce harm. So he was a cool in that fashion, him being a comic as well. And then as far as like comedy wise, I really like Patrice O'Neill, who also passed away, but he was like a legend. Just one of those guys that he pushed the envelope in the same way that there's a guy out here named Corey Holcomb. Like Corey Holcomb and Patrice O'Neill, they will never be accepted by the status quo. They will always be underground, but they will always be like revered as pillars in the community because they're such a authentic and unique perspective. And it's so funny that you can't help but to enjoy what they're doing, even if it probably makes you mad, So, like Patrice O'Neill was really thought-provoking. And I think Corey Holcomb is just like, he's just more silly and loose. He's probably even less caring with the things that he says. So he's like completely off the cuff. But a lot of it is spot on, and it's just funny. So it's just like, oh, you have to give it up because it is what it is. So I admire that, because those are two people, and off I think all four of them as that I've named, and there's plenty of others, but those are people who kind of like stuck to their artistic, path and didn't veer off the path to appease the status quo and like, trying to assimilate to just telling whatever jokes that they thought needed to be told, and they tell jokes that, people aren't hearing, and also, people that should be hearing them or that do need to be told on an artistic level. So those are people that I look up to. But I would say, like, as far as where do I get inspired from as far as comedy, funny enough, it's battle rap. There's this guy named Daylight who's out here. He's from Watts, California. But this guy Daylight is just an hilarious battle rapper. And I feel like battle rapping is probably one of the most comedic theater art forms that I've ever watched, So a lot of my inspiration comes from music and battle rapping, and this specifically this guy Daylight, who's just hilarious to listen to and follow, because like his rhyme schemes, the things that he talks about, is completely different than any other battle rapper. And he comes up with different schemes and outfits. He'll wear a whole Neo Matrix type of outfit and do that scheme for every three rounds, and it will be hilarious. So there's just elements to that where I think it's very comedic. And yeah, that's probably people who I look up or I admire and look up to, because these are people who are making their way without support. You know, and I enjoy, because I feel like that's very akin to my story. I feel like a very I don't know if you guys are familiar with MF Doom, but I feel like a underground musician. Like, I'm not gonna fully pop in that way, but the people who hear me are gonna love it, you know.
I like that. Yeah. Okay. So do you have hope for the future of veganism, of humanity in general?
Oh man. I mean, there's always a speck of hope, you know. I don't think hope can be stomped out as long as there's life, you know. Now, the quality of that life and how that life is able to express itself, it varies, right? Because we have, that's the whole veganism. We know that there's animals that rather live happily lives, eating the things that they want to eat without anyone disrupting their interests, you know, them having families and them doing things. And that's a form of life, but it's the quality of it, I would say, is very poor. It's something that the animal doesn't want to live in, that type of environment. And I think it's similar to us. I think humans, a good portion of us have helped build what only could be compared to as like a prison type of system. No matter where we are on the planet, we help concoct and fortify these walls that imprison, you know, our behavior and our practices. So hope, I think prisoners remain hopeful because they've woken up another day and they get to possibly chip at the wall, or possibly, it depends. See, the prison is so fragmented to where some people are just looking to paint the walls in the prison, and some people are looking to escape. Some people are looking just to get seconds during lunch, you know, and some people are looking to escape. Some people are looking to be able to spend more time outside on the yard before they have to go to sleep. And some people are looking to escape the prison, you know? So just the prison is so fragmented where hope will always be an element as long as there's people waking up in the prison and seeing what's their environment is like. But their interests, unfortunately, could be altered or could be offset. They could be deterred in a way if they're not fully strong in what they desire and what they want and what it looks like. So, I mean, it's tough to answer that question, because I think in the immediate now, oh man, I think we're only going to see more pain and heartache. Like we've been associated here, at least in the States, with like some sort of mass shooting every, you know,
more than one a
maybe
day
every
moment,
month. Huh?
More than one a day, hasn't there been so far this year?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So
incredible.
There hasn't been any downtime where people can just address the wounds that have already been inflicted and like try to see where they are mentally and physically to assess the situation. Like, we haven't even fully been able to assess our environment. So I feel like, unfortunately, unless a miracle happens, we're only going to see more of like some turmoil and some bullshit going on. And I do remain hopeful. I think that's one of the reasons why I do comedy and I want to express myself artistically, is to kind of change the narrative. You know, I want to make, if unfortunately it's like mistreatment is fashionable, Like mistreatment is a fashion, like a jacket or like a t-shirt that we wear. And it's the only fashion that the prison produces. The prison doesn't make other clothes. You can't wear other clothes to separate yourself from the prison. You're in the prison of mistreatment. So all your clothes are striped and they're the prisoner's uniform. So until we could break the fashion of mistreatment and the fashion of just what's keeping us bogged down, I think then we can look at it a little bit more constructively as far as like us moving into an area of change and what looks good. But until then, I think we're going to still experience, unfortunately, a lot of the same that's been going on, if not just more so. It's like we hope to continue to have things like this and this podcast, and people continue to find their own form of truth, because really, that's what you do. I wouldn't follow any celebrity, I wouldn't follow anybody if they weren't resonating in the truth that I found in myself. So that's something that I listen to is don't follow people, follow truth, and the truth will lead you to your people, you know, because everybody
Oh,
will be following
wow.
that same type of truth. Yeah. So
Love that.
that's how I honestly feel. So I think it's going to be similar, you know. I would answer that question with that type of statement is yeah, I remain hopeful. I definitely think that there's hope for humanity, but I also think that there's going to be, unfortunately, a lot of tears and bloodshed as we get to a collective truth and understanding to where we can move into a constructive space, you know.
Yeah, man.
Long-term hope and short-term despair.
Which is probably the playbook for control, really. Because it's like,
Yes. Yeah.
just leave them a little bit, you know, let's have them in despair, but just leave them a little bit hopeful to where, you
Yeah.
know, the rebel fully doesn't turn over as the way
Yes,
that
that's
it could.
true. That's true. Yes. Yeah. How depressing. Well, that's a great time to finish.
Thank you guys, man. This was
Thank
great. This was
you,
awesome.
Marcus. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. That's been awesome. Thanks so
This
much.
is really
And
awesome. I appreciate you guys making space for me to talk some plant-based shit.
not at all. Not at all. It's been great. And we've loved talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Coming, Marcus. It's been a pleasure, pal.
Yeah. Can't wait to hear the episode.
That was good, wasn't it?
Oh man, that was so funny. He's a very, very funny guy. And if you haven't seen any of his output yet on YouTube or anywhere else, then we'll tag him in the episode. You can follow his link tree and it will send you to his podcasts and his YouTube, etc. And treat yourself because you're going to have a laugh. You're going to have a great laugh.
Absolutely. And it got quite deep and meaningful at times as well.
Yeah, really good. I really like that last comment. That was really good. I'm gonna have to re-listen to it to make sure I get it
You
right.
follow your truth and you'll find your.
Don't follow people, follow your truth, and the
Yeah.
truth will lead you to your people.
Wow.
That's fantastic. I
Come
love that. I wish I was that clever.
out with a profound statement just once in your
This is
life.
what. Yeah, this is why we have guests on, you see,
Yeah,
because neither of us could come up with anything
we can
like
Oh, fantastic. Well, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope you've enjoyed it. And if you want to come and join us on How I Vegan podcast, then drop us a line, either on our socials or by email.
Which is howiveganpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, like,
Fantastic.
subscribe, share,
Great.
rate, give us a review, and all the other good stuff.
Tell your next door neighbor
Yeah,
and your
and
postie
yes. And apart
and the Amazon delivery person.
we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Cheers.
Ta-ta.